Hello and welcome to the Profit Express. I'm Tim Healy and I'm inviting you to join me each and every Wednesday so you can be prepared to win the battle for business. That's right. Now listen, I know you're out there. You're closing deals. You're making money. You're turning prospects into profits. So I got to make it worth your while. That's why I have on the kinds of guests that you can listen, learn, and earn from. Today's guest, no exception. Now, over the many years I've hosted the show, I've always been amazed at the amazing products and services entrepreneurs create to satisfy the needs of their customers. But today's guest has kind of taken it one step further. He's created a whole new niche within a massive industry. And it started when he was a kid and he and his dad were making wine in the basement at home. And he said, and I quote, you know, hey, you know, why'd you get into the wine business? He said, well, you know what? I thought it'd be a really cool and sexy thing to do. And today's guest is Stephen Scornato, and he is the owner of Long Island Vine Care. Now, here's the interesting thing. He is what is called a viticulturalist. Now, I'm not going to begin to define what that means. I'll let Stephen do that when he's on in just a moment. And he's actually, here's another interesting fact, he's one of two viticulturalists in the United States. And one thing that really intrigued me and why I want to have Stephen on today is that it is his passion that has fueled him to get to the point that he's at today. And I want you listening to realize that passions and things that you're in love with can be intimidating sometimes. But I know my conversation with Stephen is going to give you the hope and confidence to pursue your own passions because you never know where they will lead. So it's a great pleasure to have on board the Profit Express, Stephen Scornato, again, the owner of Long Island Vine Care. Stephen, how are you today?
Good. Thanks so much for having me on the show, Tim.
And well, listen, it's not just, you know, you're in the wine business.
Yes.
Okay. Which is a massive industry worldwide.
That's right.
No doubt, as you know.
Yes.
But you are a viticulturalist. And okay, so I don't know what that means. So you're gonna share that in a moment. But not only that, you know, when you and I were talking earlier, you're one of two in America. Very fascinating. We're gonna get to that. First, let's start off with, what is a viticulturalist?
A viticulturist is pretty much just a vineyard nerd. Anyone who really gets turned on by growing plants.
A vineyard nerd. So again, another term I've never heard before. Okay.
Yep.
So it started, you and your dad making wine in the basement. Take us, because that's the origin of all this. Take us back to that.
I think we bought a kit for like $40 and
really?
It had all the tubes and all the containers and stuff.
Right.
And it had dehydrated grape must, which is pretty much just grape syrup from California that they vacuum sealed.
Right.
So we would rehydrate it with water.
Okay.
We filled up the Brita pitcher like 30 times to get the thing going.
Yeah.
And then you play winemaker and you add the yeast and you watch the fermentation start and bubble. You let it settle. You siphon it off the sediment that settles to the bottom of the container. And eventually you bottle it. And I think the first two or three times we did it, we weren't too impressed, but we had a great time.
So you and dad were doing some bonding, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And just kind of solving problems, making it up as we went along. The kit is a good start for anybody that's interested.
Are those kits still around?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Oh,
okay. So for other future, you know, vine nerds,
this is an okay place to start.
They could get their own.
If you don't hate this, you may want to keep going.
Right. That'd be a good first step.
Yeah.
So now, okay. So they sell you the tubes, the hardware, the equipment, but then they sold you, you said it was grape.
Yeah.
They're not real grapes. It was like,
they dehydrate it so that it ships better, because otherwise it will start to ferment while it's en route to whatever wine store you're buying it from.
So, all right. So whose original idea was it? Did you go to your dad?
That's a good question.
Or was it your dad's?
I feel like it was one of those organic things that we were just like, hey, let's try it. Or maybe because it wasn't the first wine, but the second wine, we were going to try and make like a sweeter port style wine for my mom. So we were going to make this gift for my mom.
Special for mom.
Yeah.
Now, how old are you?
I was a teenager. I was 16, 17.
So maybe you had a little glass of wine, maybe taste. I mean, you're not really, I assume, maybe not drinking a whole lot of wine.
No,
right, okay.
But that's the thing. In my house, food and wine were very much respected and celebrated in equal proportion. So
it's how you were raised,
That's how I was raised, yeah.
Sure.
And I was always raised in the garden. My mother was always planting tons of plants. So between those two facets of our very important home life, I think, you know, winemaking and now vineyard management was a natural outcropping of how I was raised.
No pun intended, outcropping.
Yes.
So food and wine, important, you know, being around the table, the holidays, I'm getting the sense.
Yes.
Important with the family. So you and your dad do this, which sounds like a lot of fun.
It was.
The first bottle you made, how drinkable? Was it good? Did you pour it down the drain? I mean,
it didn't make you sick.
that's a good first start, right? Okay. So a viticulturalist is, in its most basic form, a vine nerd. I'm quoting you.
Yeah.
Okay. So now you're the owner, you're the CEO of Long Island Vine Cares, the company.
Right.
Okay. What do you guys do?
We specialize in boutique vineyards for private owners. So if someone has space on their property or estate, we go in and we meet with the customer. Mm-hmm. We find out their interests. You know, what kind of wine grapes would you like us to grow? And we will set up from start to finish the trellising, the planting, the installation, everything necessary to have a fully functional and long-term vineyard on their property. A couple years down the road, we also make the wine for them from those grapes.
So if somebody hires you, they're a wine enthusiast.
Right.
Okay, they hear about you, maybe it's another customer referral, right?
That's usually where it comes from, right?
Sure, sure. Because I didn't know you guys existed. And I don't drink, right? But I've never heard of it.
Yeah.
And that's, again, part of, you know, the focus for today, you know, just how entrepreneurs can be so creative and so passionate with their ideas. And you've created a whole new niche within a massive industry. So somebody hires you and they've got enough land. So how much land would somebody need to do this the right way?
My average customer has about 100 vines planted, which sounds like a lot, but it's usually just 1/10 of an acre.
Okay.
With how the vines are spaced out. But here's the tricky thing is you usually need 1/2 acre because you don't want the vineyard stuck between either, you know, your house or trees on the other side of the property.
Right.
So you need more space than just that 1/10 of an acre because you want the vineyard to be receiving full sun.
Right.
And not to be blocked by anything.
Yeah. It has to be an ideal kind of environment.
It really does.
Right. Yes. Not a huge amount of land though.
No.
Okay. All right. So then they sign on board with you. You set it all up, right? You plant the vines and it takes, you said, a couple of years until it can start to yield.
So if I planted a grapevine today, we would be growing the grapevine for 2022, 2023. Mm-hmm. And then in the fall of 2024, we would be harvesting our first crop.
Okay. So it's a 3-year?
It's a 3-year process.
Okay. That's not too crazy.
No.
Right. Okay. So now, you know, they sign on board, they're a customer.
Yes.
How dirty are their hands getting?
I tell people they can be involved in everything.
Right.
Or they can sit on their porch and watch the whole thing unfold before their eyes.
So it's really based on who they are.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they are, because I saw an interview you did, I think it was on News 12 a little while ago.
Right.
And I think you had said, and it also caught my attention, and this is part of the passion part. You know, we all know, and we've all heard the phrase, you know, passion is contagious. So, you know, again, after this interview, you know, you will have caught the passion of Stephen here. I can assure you that. So you said, I have a relationship with each vine. Now, again, somebody, you know, I don't drink wine, but it's just like, man, when I saw that, you know, before I really knew you, before we initially spoke, I'm like, man, this guy is intense. You know, but in a good way,
yes.
Not intense in a crazy way, but I respect that. So what the hell does it mean? I have a relationship with each vine.
When I got the idea, when I kind of synthesized the idea for this company, I had my first job in the wine industry at what was then Martha Clara.
Okay. I was here on Long Island, right?
Yep. Now it's RGNY. And now I'm vineyard manager there as of a couple months ago, which is kind of another whole wild circle.
Right.
But when I was there, they gave me a place to live on the property.
Really?
So I was very close to, I was in that vineyard, living in that vineyard for that summer. And I was looking at each vine as an individual, which was overwhelming because they have, if it's let's call it 100 acres, is 1,000 acres per plant. You do the math. It's a million vines.
Yeah.
And I was looking at, I would be in the crew. There's about a dozen guys in the crew. And I would want to stop and just look at each individual vine and say, what if we did one bud less or one bud more on each vine? What if we cropped it one cluster heavier, one cluster less to balance out the vigor of the vine? Wouldn't we just optimize this farm? Now, on a commercial scale, that's impossible. That's the secret of success in a qualitative way of my business is if I have 100 vines in Tim Healy's backyard one day, then I can stop and look at that one vine and say, you know what? It should only have 15 clusters. And then on the other side of your property where you have Sauvignon Blanc going, I go, you know what? Next year we should try and get 24, 25 clusters out of this vine. And crop level is just one metric in terms of season-wide growing that we can kind of play with the balance of these vines. But through the course of planting a grape, a vineyard in someone's backyard, I then develop a relationship with each vine as time progresses. Last year, this vine acted in such and such a way, and I'm going to have to, discipline it this year, or cut it back, or this vine performed very well this year. Maybe next year I can do such and such with it.
So in a commercial vineyard, there could be a million vines, I think you said. It's impossible to take that approach.
There's varying degrees of how you can take that approach. And I try and bring that to my work when I'm in a commercial setting.
So then when you're working with your clients and they have, like the average you said, is like 100 vines for a typical consumer client.
Right.
Okay. And then, but that allows you then to... It's like micromanage.
Absolutely.
Right?
That's the fun part of the job.
Wow.
You literally see the fruits of your labor in that if everything goes well and Mother Nature doesn't throw a monkey wrench in the whole thing.
Right.
Everything's ripening at the same time and each vine is balanced. Because if you don't balance out a grapevine, you'll have one vine here and another vine here.
Right.
This vine will be overcropped and won't be able to ripen the fruit as well as it should. And this vine will be undercropped. And so this vine will have super ripe fruit 2 weeks earlier than this one. But then you're harvesting everything at the same time. And in the same basket, you have underripe fruit and overripe fruit. You can't make good wine that way.
So I'm just trying to envision. I know you got a crew that works for you when you're out there.
Right.
You're the guy who's really managing the
calling
vines.
The shots.
Right, exactly. Of course, you're the owner. I'm almost imagining, you're keeping this all in your head?
Yes. You know what it's like? It's like when let's say you did 10 interviews in a day. You would never get confused about which conversation you had with which person. And so if I see 10 vineyards in a day and I go home and I'm talking to Sarah, my wife, about what I saw, I never get it confused because it's like the vines are speaking to me. That's my boss. They're telling me what to do. They're telling me what I missed last week, if there's anything.
Right.
And they're telling me what to do the following week. They're telling me what they need.
So you mentioned your wife, her name was Sarah?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Be honest now. How sick is she about hearing about vines?
I try and keep it to a minimum.
Okay.
I'm sure she
loves you and supports the efforts, but I think after a while, it's like, okay, Steven, enough of these vines, right?
I have to come home and be like, all right, there's 10 things I want to tell her. I'll just tell her like the two highlights.
Some highlights, exactly. So, and this is, listen, we're having fun with the show here, but it's not often I speak to somebody, you're just not passionate, you're intense.
I'm obsessed. Yeah.
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 Which it's fun to talk to somebody with that level of enthusiasm for what they do. But that's, that's what makes entrepreneurs. Because entrepreneurs, as you can certainly understand, of which I am one as well, we're not the typical character, if you will. We take certain risks,
yes.
Financial risks. We make sacrifices.
Yes.
You know, you're working weekends, nights. You know, we're all doing what we do in our own sort
yeah.
of way.
Yeah, I disappeared during harvest.
And I can imagine. Yeah. Yeah, you're MIA. But yeah, it just goes to show, you know, that level of passion and intensity, not just to think of the idea, but then also to bring that to your clients and what they get to experience. So then, all right, so let's go back now.
Right.
This is a fascinating story. So a viticulturalist, you're a vine nerd. So you had, I think you said, an internship.
When it was Martha Clare, I did a summer-long right. internship at RGNY.
So how long have you been in business? When did you have the idea? So, hey, this is an idea I want to pursue. Take us to that point.
The summer that I was at Martha Clare, I came up with the idea. That was 12 years ago, 13 years ago now. We started the company in 2015. Okay. I was doing a little bit of vineyard management okay. on the side.
Right, right.
And I said, all right, one more customer, and I'm going to take the leap, and I'm going to...
You'd have just
call
enough
up
to
legal Zoom and get the LLC started. Right.
I love it. So now, all right. So you said 2015 or 2016?
2015 we started.
2015. All right. So you're about 7 years in.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
All right. So there's, because I know for everybody listening, you always want to find out, okay, you know, the market, you know, how do you define your market? How do you go after your market? Okay. Because that's obviously mission critical.
That's the question.
So, you know, wine can be one of those consumer experiences, consumer products
yes.
that people can spend a ton of money on. You know, you can go to a restaurant, spend $300-$500 on a
absolutely.
Bottle, right? So who do you, or how would you define?
Right.
How would you define your ideal customer?
Someone who enjoys wine. But isn't a snob about it.
So you don't want the wine snob?
No, because...
Interesting, why not?
So take something like Cabernet Franc. Let's say I met a wine snob who was really into Cabernet Franc, and they're like, I want Cabernet Franc planted. That wine snob has very specific expectations about how Cabernet Franc should taste. Mm-hmm. But they have never tasted a Cabernet Franc like the Cabernet Franc that's going to be growing, even if they have an ideal site, like the Cabernet Franc that's growing in their right. backyard.
So they might not like that experience then.
They might not.
Because they have like tunnel vision almost
yes.
as to what they're expecting.
Yes.
Okay.
So a lot of my customers, they're not wine snobs. They're wine enthusiasts. They have a very open-minded approach. And really... You can walk into a wine store and buy exactly what you want. You can't do the same thing when you plant a vineyard. When you plant a vineyard, it's really just what the earth is giving you. It's going to be, if
right.
you have a good vineyard manager,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
it's going to be the highest quality
right.
that you can achieve from that specific site. But you're still married to that site and you're still married to that microclimate. So that's what I tell people. I say, look, wine is cool, but the grapevines and the whole process and the whole almost cultural entity of the vineyard itself mm-hmm. is its own experience. And if you're doing it for the wine, you'll be disappointed in terms of how long it takes and how much money it is by the end of the whole process.
Right, right, right.
You should really be doing this for the experience of the vineyard.
Yeah, you're not looking for a return on investment.
Exactly,
right.
exactly.
Right. So then... It's not the snob, which is a great distinction to make. It's the enthusiast. No, all right. Now let's go back to when you and your dad bought that kit
yeah.
with you know the grape dust or whatever,
right,
whatever the
right.
heck it was, and you made your first bottle, and you were sharing that, you know, your family growing up.
Yeah.
You know, the meal, the holidays, the wine were a part of it. So I'm almost envisioning that a great customer for you is somebody who's similar to the Scarnatos, right?
Yeah.
You know, where it's the experience and
absolutely.
Because I can imagine to think about this, like you have so like one of your customers, right? And they've been with you for, you know, 5 or 10 years. Well, not 10 years yet, but they've been with you for a number of years. it's something they can brag about, but in a good way. Oh, for sure. It's, right?
Yes. This is our wine. We may or may not have helped grow it,
but this is
really ours. And you think of wine as a, you know, this is in the bottle right now as a step. Oh, this is the finished product, but it's never finished. This thing is alive. Right now, actually, this bottle is going through fermentation. There are yeast in this bottle eating sugar and turning it into alcohol. There's microorganisms in here. And same thing for the red wine that we bottled last week. Like, this is alive. It's going to change and evolve over the next 10, even 15 years. So it really is a part of the family, more than just the experience.
So I'm imagining, so you have to have some pretty close relationships with your customers.
I do. And I love that aspect of it.
All right. So this is interesting. So they're a customer and there's a certain growing season, obviously, right?
For sure.
So you will be at their house how many times in a season?
100.
That often?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Wow, that's a lot of time.
Because I'm also there in the winter, even if it's just rolling up the nets after harvest.
Some maintenance or that
pruning
kind of,
or fixing the trellis. Yeah, right. There's all these little things.
And right.
I miss my vines, so I have to go visit them sometimes.
Oh, I can imagine we must have some interesting conversations with you, and it's Sarah, right? Yeah, at the dinner table. Does she ever get jealous of the vines? Be honest. I mean,
no, I'm pretty nuts about her too, okay. So it keeps things kind of balanced.
So, like it, like any small business, you know, you've been in business for 7 years,
right?
But like anything, you know, you've got the passion for it, obviously the enthusiasm, which is great. And as good as that is, and as important as that is, as part of it, you know, because I know it's business owners that aren't passionate, but they make a ton of money.
Absolutely,
you know what I'm saying,
yeah.
Right? So then let's talk about, which a lot of listeners love to hear about, the marketing of it, the branding of it. Because again, which is interesting, which I'm you know, as the host, as a business owner myself, I'm like, you're very niche. That's not always easy. So how do you market this?
A lot of it, all of my really good customers are word of mouth. Mm-hmm. That's where a lot of it comes from.
Right.
And because it's a real long-term relationship with someone, mm-hmm. it's not the kind of thing where I want to hang up flyers or be on the side of buses for. Because anybody that I've acquired or met in that kind of way of, spaghetti against the wall type marketing.
More of a traditional marketing.
Yes.
Or, yeah.
They haven't been the type of people who were willing to have a long-term vision in that way. So marketing is one place. That's probably the number one arena where, like, if I could just pour some magic dust into one aspect of the business, it would be marketing. And customer acquisition.
All right. So obviously I can understand word of mouth being powerful because this is very experience driven.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And there's a story that goes along with it. So the News 12 piece, for example, the phone was ringing off the hook for us compared to normal because it was the type of platform like this one, actually, where I was able to tell the story of the whole thing.
Yeah.
And it's the kind of thing where if someone asks me what I do, I need like at least 5 minutes of their time.
Yeah. Well, it's an experience, but you're telling the story of it.
Right.
You know, you can't say, well, I plant vines for people. They wouldn't understand. It was like, okay,
and it wouldn't capture a potential customer's imagination enough to even draw them in enough to give me a phone call to learn more. So that's the hurdle for me is it is so niche. I need a potential client to really understand, not just with a billboard, but actually with words and relationship, or for them to maybe see it and talk to one of my clients so they can really understand what drives the whole experience.
So have you tried marketing that hasn't worked or bombed?
Yeah, I have in the Hamptons. This is a very interesting experience. There's a vineyard that's looked really bad for a number of years.
A commercial one?
No.
Oh, is it like a private one?
Kind of a private, but okay. It's on like a very main thoroughfare.
Okay.
And we turned it around in a season. We made it look really good. And I put up a sign for the whole season.
Right.
In front of this vineyard. And the sign said that this vineyard is managed by Long Island Vine Care. We specialize, blah, blah, blah. And I know that there's traffic on this one street too sometimes. So people could stop and look at the vineyard, look at the sign, look at the vineyard, look at the sign.
Sure, had good traffic.
No phone calls. So I thought that would be a perfect, perfect picture of what we do. So that's an example of something that flopped that I put a lot of stock in. We spent a lot of money on that sign.
No, I can imagine.
Beautiful sign.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think what, you know, you've encapsulated well. You got to know your product or service, and sure. And yours, you know, you're really not selling a bottle of wine.
No, I'm not.
It's
no.
One of the elements, of course.
It's a nice byproduct,
right? And how funny is that though? When you think of the bottle of wine, yeah, you know, we'll get there,
right?
But it's everything else that's kind of leading up to that.
Absolutely.
So then it's a matter of figuring out a marketing vehicle that can encapsulate what it is that you do, the experience, and the kind of people who would buy into that.
Right. Because you would think it would be wine snobs. Those are easy to find.
Right. But there, like you said earlier, it's the enthusiast, not the snob. And there's a big difference with the enthusiast versus right. snob.
This is a way for enthusiasts to become snobs. Not as a derogatory snob, like turning up their nose.
Right.
But I tell people, look, give me 3 years and you will be you'll be able to teach wine courses.
Okay, so now it just as we're talking, it's just like I'm envisioning your customers. So maybe as a percentage, how many like to get their hands dirty with you? And are they better customers or not?
I'd say 10%.
Okay.
Are getting their hands dirty.
So not a lot, but some of them do.
Right.
Okay.
And actually, I have a couple customers that I just do the pest management.
I just
go in and take care of diseases and stuff.
Right, right.
And they do all of the labor aspects of it.
Okay.
So there's that too.
Okay.
Yeah. So there is a wide range, but I would say 90% of my customers, I'm taking care of everything. And I actually encourage that because you don't want, you know what it is? You know what the big thing for me is? The inconvenience of farming. If you're late with a task on farming,
right.
You can't go back and do it. You've got to just plow through
and
show up.
Yeah, the
on
window
time.
Closed.
The
if
window
you're, yeah.
closed. That's it.
Yeah.
And most likely, the task that the person is trying to avoid, they're going to have to do it on a Saturday or something. And yeah, the first 7 or 8 vines, it's fun pulling the leaves or positioning the shoots to grow in a certain way. But once you get to like the 10th vine and you've got 90 more to go,
right.
No one's having fun anymore.
Well, yeah. The romance of it is
the romance
like,
is
yeah,
gone.
Like, yeah, I'm okay now.
Yeah, I'm good.
Let me get Steven in here, right?
Exactly.
Which is good. It's great for
it
business.
It is.
Geographically, again, the show we're here on Long Island, we can be heard worldwide, obviously.
Right.
Your geographic market is where to where?
I have 3 pockets that are really good growing regions. But it's also just good in a business sense, not to stretch myself too thin. So I've got one in like the Gold Coast area, Huntington, Cold Spring Harbor, Lloyd Neck.
North Shore of Long Island, right?
Yep, North Shore of Long Island. Then I've got the North Fork of Long Island.
Right.
And then the South Fork of Long Island. And a couple in between.
Right.
Yep. I work with a commercial vineyard in Brooklyn. We grow grapevines in planter boxes, a little bit bigger and a little bit taller than this table. The vines themselves are in planter boxes. That's a great Rooftop Reds is the name of the company. If you're ever in Brooklyn,
they're commercial.
They're commercial. Yes.
Really,
you've got to check this place out. That's a very, very. That's a cool business that Devin is running over Rooftop Reds. Then I've got a couple customers that I consult for once a month. That's as often as I can make it.
Yeah.
In Westchester.
Okay.
And those are bigger.
Predominantly Long Island.
Yeah. So predominantly Long Island.
So then, you know, it's kind of funny. So we're thinking about business opportunity.
Yes.
You know, the last place you'd think of a vineyard would be Brooklyn.
Right.
Of all places, right?
Yeah.
This guy, one of your clients, has done it. Did you think you could, like, we're talking about business model now, you know, because it's like, you know, we want to be successful. There has to be an element of scaling a business.
Yes.
You know, because there's only one of you right now.
Right.
which is going to be tough because you're the brains behind it, the passion behind it. Have you thought of a system or a process that you could sell different? Like, it goes back to what you and your dad got, right?
Right.
The box kit of wine.
Yes.
Is something you could, because think of all these rooftop, you know, these apartment Absolutely. People, right? Yep. I don't know. We're brainstorming, Stephen. I don't know.
I've thought of it. And again, I think for that business model, it would be a little bit cost prohibitive for people with rooftops. But there's just so many rooftops. And there's got to be...
Lots of roofs.
Yeah, there's lots of roofs. There's lots of restaurants that right. could be... It's an untapped market for sure. Right. For sure. Yeah. Restaurants that could be having rooftop vineyards up there just for the ambiance and then, you know, be selling the wine for...
We're drinking our wine. Exactly. Yeah, of course.
Yep. So yeah, there's a lot of untapped potential. And people ask me about franchising or, you know, expanding into other wine growing regions, either in Virginia or you can grow wine grapes almost anywhere. But my thing is there's still so many people on Long Island that haven't heard about what I do yet. Sure. That I still have a lot of growth to do here. And you can't, what I want to say to wine enthusiasts or people that are thinking of getting into the industry mm-hmm. is go for it and get into the grape side, because there are no vineyard managers. There are no viticulturalists coming up. And there's a big untapped market for, you know, in the wine industry on the commercial side. We need more vineyard managers. We need more viticulturists. Yeah. And in order for me to franchise, I would need to hire another one of me.
Absolutely. Have you put a lot of thought into the franchise model?
I have. And I think it would be...
You think it's potentially viable?
I think it's potentially viable. I could duplicate what I'm doing, mm-hmm. but I would need someone that is as attentive and knows as much as I do.
I don't know if you could you duplicate the passion? I don't think you could.
I could do without the passion. if I could find someone that knew what manganese deficiency looks like and downy mildew and powdery mildew, I'd be okay.
Oh, we talk about that all the time at the Healy House, of course.
Right.
Yeah. Who doesn't, right?
Who doesn't?
You know, manganese deficiency, that's a very popular topic.
Yes.
So you've been in business for 7 years. It's certainly a passion. If you had a mulligan, a do-over, what would it be?
Like, if I could go back and do it again.
Yeah, the classic do-over question.
I would just tell myself to chill out and wait.
Really?
Yeah.
In what sense? That's interesting.
I wanted to let this thing go so many times, and luckily Sarah talked me out of it.
Oh, you want to throw in the towel?
Absolutely.
Why?
It's a seasonal business, and just the roller coaster of mm-hmm. trying to pay yourself, trying to take care of your family, putting so much effort into. I mean, farming will break your spirit. Farming wants to break your spirit. Mother Nature wants to break your spirit. She is a cruel mistress.
Because, yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And I would just say, wait, like that. I want to list all of the customers that have just trickled in, and each customer has made such a difference in my life and have been so encouraging. And I'm finally at a place where I can look at all 24 backyard customers that I have mm-hmm. and look at this beautiful amphitheater full of people and say, I can't wait to meet who's next. But when I only had 10 customers, and I would have to, court these potential clients and massage them.
Right.
And then they're so flippant and they don't turn into anything. It's so disheartening. But now I know my numbers are, I have to flirt.
So you've kind of gotten over a bit of a hump then.
Yes.
Where there's enough.
There's enough that the business is vaguely sustainable.
Oh, you're doing better than that.
Yeah.
But so it's... And it's funny how you're not just economically, because listen, at the end of the day, it's about making money. It's about profit.
Absolutely.
No doubt.
Yes.
For sure. Because, you know, love of something is, and it's not a hobby here. Okay.
No.
But it's almost as if you know, beyond the economics, the clients are really giving you a very powerful emotional charge, if you will.
Right. I do
the way you describe it.
I do it for the Frazzonis. I do it for the Smiths. I do it for the Fioris.
Right, right.
Yeah. I can't disappoint them.
No.
No, they've really taken, especially the earlier clients, they've taken a leap in taking me on. I've made certain financial risks, but equally I've made viticultural risks as well. And I've said to clients like, yeah, I'm going to, you know, it'll be majority Chardonnay, but there's this new variety that I really want to try.
And if
it works, it could really be something amazing.
Or it could blow up.
I have to tell them that too. It could blow up, guys.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. That's amazing. Wow, we could keep going on this for quite some time.
Let's go, baby. I hope you're having as much fun as I am.
Listen, you know, obviously. All right, so completely off of wine for a minute and grapes and all that. As you go about your daily life, maybe you're on social media, maybe you've read a book. Is there an entrepreneur out there, whether in the industry or not, anybody who you look to and you're like, man, they're sharp and you've learned from them. They've inspired you.
My Uncle John, he's actually my first cousin, but he's a little older than me. He started a cake business and he's an amazing chef.
Okay.
And he was always like me, always after quality, but everybody wanted his cakes. So he had to keep making more of them. So his challenge was, how do I duplicate the process,
right,
while still maintaining
like quality? The custom cakes for events and all that stuff?
Exactly.
Okay. Right.
But then he was venturing out into like Costco.
Really?
Yes. He was selling.
Oh, we're talking about big time distribution.
He got that big. That's why he's my hero. Like he did the thing. He did the thing that we talk about and that we, you know, aspire to accomplish. And he just got married 2 weeks ago and I had a blast just walking around the wedding, introducing myself to some of his business partners. Cool guys.
They
all had stories. They all worked in all these different, Pepsi Cola, all these different avenues. But he fielded, or they found them, or he found them.
Yeah, his network, yeah.
Yeah, he had an amazing network, and he surrounded himself with really amazing people.
All right, so this is a cousin, Uncle John.
Yeah.
Older, okay, so you certainly admire him. Now, when you go from passion to internship to I'm going to start my business, okay?
Right.
What was the family like? They're like, yeah, do you mind a viticulturist? What are you talking about? I mean, what'd you go to school for?
Music.
You got a degree in music?
I got a degree in music. I specialized in harmonic jazz theory. I played piano by the skin of my teeth. I graduated playing piano and I minored in business.
Okay. So you got a degree in music and jazz and you're a viticulturalist.
Right.
Wow. Okay. Have you ever apologized to your parents for that one?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm paying a majority of the school loan, so there's all that. Right, I don't owe
good.
Them that much apology.
Good,
yeah.
Okay. Good.
I gotta
good,
apologize right, to right. myself for that one.
That is too funny. All right. So I go off topic. So with the family, say, hey, you know, this is what I'm gonna be diving into.
Right.
Because family, the closest people to you, and I don't want to, you know, throw any family under the bus. They want to make sure Steven's good.
Right.
Safe.
Right.
Secure.
Yep.
They say you're nuts. You out of your mind?
No.
None of them.
No.
Come on. Nobody? Friends?
Friends.
Some friends. Okay.
And I guess once I got like 4 years in, so around like 2019, 2020.
Okay.
And I'd be telling, yeah, we just got a new customer or I just started a new consulting gig.
Right.
They'd
right.
look at me and go, Steven, I didn't know that was going to work, man. So it's coming out now how people really felt. People were kind to me back when I started.
You're like, good luck, buddy.
Yeah. Good luck.
Fingers crossed.
Oh, you're actually starting the business? You're not just going to keep talking about it for a while? Yeah, I'm actually starting the business. And so people have been trickling in like, Steven, that was kind of crazy.
And we talked about it a little earlier. You know, every entrepreneur gets into some dark places.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and if you say you're not, you're lying.
I mean,
we've all been there, and you can have the affirmations and all you want, but there's some times you're like, what the hell
what am I doing?
But it sounds like your wife is a real rock. She's real.
She is. And she runs the business. I'm taking care of the plants.
So she's like
taking care of the business.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. She's doing all the billing.
How's it working with your wife? That's not always easy, right?
No. If anything, she has the harder part. She's got to balance the budget for the family and for the business.
Yeah.
And I'll come to her and be like, Sarah, I need $1,000 to buy this new piece of equipment.
Right.
Or we got to do this and this for payroll.
Right.
And
right.
We figure it out, and she's super patient. She does not get discouraged and impatient to the degree that I do. So you have to surround yourself with those kind of people that are going to stay positive.
You got lucky with her, honestly.
No, more ways than you know.
Like from the business perspective, it's not easy to get.
Yeah, you can't just go out there and hire someone with that type of personality, no matter how bad you need it when you're running the business.
All right. Last question. So you're 7 years in. I run into you, 5 years from now.
Yeah.
Which could be a long period of time or a short period of time, right? Where do you want the business to be, Long Island Vine Care?
I was still picking up bundles of cuttings this winter. I shouldn't be doing that in 5 years.
Okay.
But that's kind of the territory. I'm still there.
Right.
I'm saying that flippantly.
Less hands-on.
Less hands-on. But some of that I like. I will never stop pruning.
Okay.
But I really shouldn't be pruning everything.
To grow, you know, there's...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. I know my place and my passion is talking to people about grapevines. You know, you go on Netflix, there's a whole bunch of documentaries about the wine aspect of it. I would love to do something like with your editor, Ian, to do some kind of documentary. We travel the world, we film all these different vines in all these different places. Farmers, there is nobody as entertaining and insightful and wise as old crotchety farmers. I want to get those guys talking about their grapes, talking about their growing practices and their opinions and their getting their quirks. I the educational aspect of the vineyard, that's where I really should be.
Well, because listen, again, there's a very emotional component to this. There's a huge story to this. It's an experience. It's great for video.
Yeah, I think
so. It's fantastic for video.
For sure.
It's been great having you on today.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
It really has.
Thanks, Tim.
Stephen Scarnato, the founder, the president, Long Island Vine Care. Listen, it's the show's first viticulturalist that we've had on. There's always a first. It's about following your passion. And as you've enjoyed my interview today with Stephen, you can no doubt feel and sense his passion for what he does. And for those of you who are listening, whether you're in the wine business or not, whatever, your industry, your product or your service, and if you've got that burning desire, pursue it. You can make some great things happen, as Stephen is with Long Island Vine Care. So be on the lookout for great interviews like the one I just had. Every Wednesday they drop. You can follow me in the show on YouTube at The Profit Express, on Facebook at The Profit Express page, Instagram at The Profit Express, so on and so forth. And always we want to thank those special to us, the sponsor, Corbett Public Relations. They've been promoting and protecting businesses and brands for over 30 years. So please visit them at corbettpr.com. That's corbettpr.com. And until next time, let's continue to win the battle for business.